This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Miss this year's Houston Press Music Awards Showcase. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on the show this evening, we have an update on Equality Texas by Executive Director Paul Scott. And then in our second hour, Juan Alvarado will be here to talk about a group called Stay With Family. They offer a venue that provides gay travelers and their straight friends connections for free accommodations in their favorite traveling destinations. And later in the second hour, Live Consortium, it's a next generation in health, wellness, nonprofit initiatives concern, providing HIV and anti-stigma education, support, research, and advocacy so that all people, regardless of status, can have full and healthy lives. And we're going to be leading up the show this evening with News Wrap, talking about the latest of the GLBT community around the world, including the U.S. Episcopal Church at its General Convention in Anaheim, California. They exacerbated years-old tensions with the Anglican Communion by voting to drop their pledge not to ordain openly gay and lesbian ministers. And they also voted to develop specific liturgies to bless same-gender unions. And also an update to last week's report about gay men being ejected from an El Paso, Texas restaurant for kissing. And that precedes a new report about a yet another gay kissing controversy, this time in Salt Lake City.
So
scandalous.
Yes. Scandalous. Let's go to this to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Petitions were filed this week with India's Supreme Court challenging a state court ruling that declared the country's law against unnatural sex, Penal Code Section 377, to be unconstitutional. Only a reversal by the nation's highest court, or parliamentary legislation, would prevent the Delhi High Court decision from becoming the law of the land. Swami Baba Ramdev, a yoga guru and Hindu television personality, filed one challenge, telling the Indian Express that homosexuality is a disease that can be treated like any other congenital defect by yoga, breathing exercises, and other meditation techniques. Astrologer Suresh Kumar Kaushal also filed a petition against the decision, falsely claiming that even animals don't indulge in such activities. He also warned that AIDS would be more easily spread if gay sex becomes legal. The Delhi High Court ruled on July 2nd that the ban on consensual same-gender sex between adults, enacted in 1860 during British colonial rule, violated human rights provisions of the Indian Constitution. The Supreme Court notified the government, whose ministers have been unable to agree on a unified position, and the NAS Foundation, the non-governmental group that led the legal fight against Section 377, that an initial hearing would be held on July 20th.
As the summer pride season wound down in the Northern Hemisphere, an estimated 1 million people celebrated in Madrid on July 4th. The annual parade in the Spanish city featured more than 30 floats and colorfully costumed participants. The marchers, who included the country's Minister of Education and other politicians, union groups, and youth organizations, focused on better protecting LGBT students and ensuring equal educational opportunities.
London's annual Pride Parade on the same day hosted crowds variously estimated at from 500,000 to 1 million people. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown's wife Sarah joined the parade after the couple hosted an official reception for organizers and the LGBT press at 10 Downing Street. A rally and concert capped off the day in Trafalgar Square. Some speakers criticized the continuing ban on gay men donating blood, while others demanded full marriage equality instead of the all-but-the-name civil partnerships currently available to UK same-gender couples.
About a 500,000 people thronged the center of Cologne on July 5th for the German city's annual Pride Parade, known as Christopher Street Day, to honor the liberation movement sparking Stonewall riots on that street in New York City's Greenwich Village in June 1969. According to a Deutsche Presseagentur report, more than 90 brightly colored floats snaked their way through the streets in pleasant summer temperatures, accompanied by marchers in what the report called fancy or revealing costumes.
Agence France-Presse counted an estimated 100,000 raucous participants at Vienna's 14th annual Pride Parade on July 4th. Latex and leather-clad marchers converged on the Austrian capital's main avenue, the news agency reported, many on colorful floats. The participants' banners and chants called for national marriage equality.
And around 300 people marched in the second LGBT Pride Parade in Bulgaria's capital of Sofia on June 27th, reportedly twice as many as last year. Police and private security officers hired by event organizers protected the marchers to prevent a recurrence of last year's violence. Skinheads and right-wing extremists attacked the city's first parade with bottles, rocks, eggs, smoke bombs, and Molotov cocktails. Police made 80 arrests. This year's parade encountered nothing more serious than some booing. Marchers called for passage of a workplace anti-discrimination law.
In the U.S., the state of Massachusetts is suing the federal government over DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. That 1996 law denies federal recognition to legally united same-gender couples and allows states to refuse to recognize such legal unions performed elsewhere. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley argues in the lawsuit filed in federal court in Boston this week that DOMA interferes with her state's ability to define and regulate marriage. For example, Coakley said, DOMA requires Massachusetts, which enacted marriage equality in 2004, to violate the constitutional rights of its citizens by treating married heterosexual couples and married same-gender couples differently in its distribution of federal Medicaid benefits and Social Security payments to spouses. A federal challenge to DOMA was also filed in March by the Boston-based Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, the legal advocacy group that won marriage equality in the state.
Washington, D.C.'s law recognizing lesbian and gay marriages legally performed elsewhere took effect on July 7th after opponents lost a court challenge seeking a public referendum on the matter. Congress, which has oversight on all D.C. laws, had 30 days to review the bill. It took no action, allowing the measure to become law. Openly gay city council member David Catania says it's the first step toward passing a marriage equality law in the city.
House committees held hearings in the nation's capital on the Domestic Partnership Benefits and Obligations Act, which would provide gay and lesbian federal employees with the same spousal benefits given to heterosexual workers, and the Safe Schools Improvement Act, which would fund school programs to prevent bullying and harassment on the basis of actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity.
And an Iraq war veteran has become the lead sponsor of a bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. U.S. Representative Patrick Murphy, a Pennsylvania Democrat, is a former West Point professor who had earlier earned a Bronze Star, rising to the rank of captain in the Army's 82nd Airborne Division. He takes over as lead sponsor for Ellen Tauscher, who reintroduced the Military Readiness Enhancement Act earlier this year. She's leaving Congress to take a position with the Obama administration. The bill currently has 150 co-sponsors in the House.
Family members of murdered gay sailor August Provost III arrived in San Diego from their Houston home this week to claim his body and to keep the pressure on military officials to be forthcoming about the circumstances of the 29-year-old African-American man's murder. His family said the Navy told him that he was shot three times while serving sentry duty on June 30th at Southern California's Camp Pendleton Marine Base. His feet and hands were bound, his mouth was gagged, and the body had been burned. Naval investigators have insisted that the murder was a random act unrelated to his sexuality, but his family and community activists, joined by some local and state elected officials, have charged that it was more likely a hate crime. A person of interest is reportedly in custody, but no charges have been filed to date. About 100 people gathered near Camp Pendleton on the evening of July 10th for a candlelight vigil for the slain sailor. Family member Rose Roy said her nephew had complained about being harassed for being gay. She told the Associated Press that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy discouraged him from asking for help from military officials. That phrase is just stupid, she said, because it tells them they have no one to speak to.
At the request of Fort Worth Mayor Mike Moncrief, the head of the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Texas agreed this week to review the results of an investigation into allegations that law enforcement officers used excessive force during a June 28th raid on a newly opened gay bar, the Rainbow Lounge. City police and state alcohol control agents arrested 7 men on public intoxication charges in the raid, and at least 2 were seriously injured. One of them, Chad Gibson, was released this week from a hospital after suffering a head injury that led to a blood clot in his brain. Witnesses during the raid said he was thrown headfirst into a wall and knocked to the floor by officers who later accused him of grabbing the groin of one of them. Gibson told local television stations this week that he did nothing of the sort, and witnesses said that he was roughed up for no apparent reason. The New York Times reported that another patron at the bar suffered broken ribs, and a third received a broken thumb during their arrests. The Fort Worth Police Department has temporarily suspended joint operations with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and both agencies say they're conducting internal investigations. Peaceful protests against the raid continued this week outside the Rainbow Lounge.
And finally, a gay kiss proved to be too much for security guards and a local police officer in another city in the Lone Star State. Carlos Diaz de Leon says he and 4 friends were at a Chico's Tacos restaurant in late June in El Paso, a popular local chain, when security guards noticed 2 of the men kissing and ordered them to leave. According to news reports, the guards told the men that faggot stuff wasn't allowed in the restaurant. De Leon, who described the kiss between his 2 friends as brief, called the police to complain. But an officer sided with the security guards, citing the Texas sodomy law, which was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2003. The city of El Paso passed an ordinance banning sexual orientation discrimination the same year. De Leon and his friends filed a complaint this week with the police department's internal affairs unit. A police spokesman told a local television station that the responding officer was a rookie who misinterpreted the law.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 11th, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's interesting that This Way Out ended with 2 Texas stories. Oh. There was a report on Channel 8 in Dallas that the Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission is publicly criticizing the reason behind the June 28th raid of a Fort Worth gay bar. As News 8 first told reporters last week, Fort Worth police records show officers staged the raid after arresting a man accused of leaving the bar drunk 2 nights earlier. It just seems strange that, there's always been sort of this accusation that TABC sort of acts with force when they want to go after somebody rather than talking to the establishment or warning them or whatever, waiting till a night and then raiding a bar, especially gay bars.
Holy bad timing, Batman. I mean, the night of Stonewall.
Yeah, some bully boys.
Well, I would bet that they had no idea.
Did they have brown shirts on? Is that their uniform, brown shirts now? The armbands?
No, I don't think so.
The little, swastikas and stuff?
I don't know.
No.
Maybe they just act like it.
Well, and we may have an update from Paul Scott, because I'm sure he was working on that when we interview him from Equality, Texas. But, it's interesting. And then, later, a week later, I think there was a raid in a bar in Dallas.
Yep, the Dallas Eagle.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't have anything on that, up to date on that.
Well, it just seems like that the timing of it had to be, someone had to have known somewhere that was the anniversary, and if they didn't...
It's a little peculiar that happened exactly to the hour that it happened.
I mean, yeah, it's there's something smells.
Something stinky there.
Yes. Well, that's the way they are. That's the way they've always acted.
Yes.
And I think that the newscast that was right before us, they were talking about the kiss in El Paso.
Yes.
In a taco place, and it's because of the sodomy law, which was overturned by the Supreme Court. However, the state of Texas in its legislature has never found it necessary to remove it from the books. So,
but
the officers get taught the laws of the state of Texas, and it's still on the books as a law.
How does one end have to deal with the other? Isn't that different?
Well,
kissing is not. I mean, is that illegal?
Well, it depends on if you're a homophobe.
I see. So it's legal in some interpretations of the law.
That's what I'm saying. Like I said, off mic. You know, mm-hmm. They probably would have taken pictures if it had been two girls.
Exactly. But two boys, it's bad.
But it has to do with who the person is.
Well, and it's going to be a long time probably before those laws are ever taken off the books.
That's because we live in Bubba Red State.
Until we have a lot more progressive Texas legislature, in which we don't. We don't have a single statewide elected Democrat in Texas. So the redistricting was done to make it even harder to get more progressive people elected.
Yes.
Well, we have another census coming up, and
I hear we're getting two more city council seats because of the increase in population.
Increase of population, plus we understand that we'll have two new congressional seats in the state of Texas, or is it three?
We won't know exactly. When the census is done and they count how many people are in each state, then there's a formula that they sort of put together to divide it so that there is always just 435
in the House.
In the House. And
100 in the Senate.
Yes.
Each state has two senators, no matter what.
Right. So it looks like we're going to probably add two. Now, on the city council, that won't happen this year. It will happen in 2011, we believe. The census is taken in 2010, but it isn't released until 2011. So there's a very good chance that in 2011 we will have a new city council map. And, you know, whenever these maps are redrawn, the incumbents always want to keep their sort of turf to be reelected.
Oh, yes.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah. But somehow they have to cut out of the city map two additional council seats,
right.
Council districts.
And on the state representatives in the state Senate and then the U.S. congressional ones when they redraw the maps, that is up to the Texas legislature. And the last time this happened, they couldn't come to an agreement.
Oh, I remember that.
So the courts more or less drew those lines
after Tom DeLay.
That was
drew
the Tom DeLay. Yes.
Well, no, the courts redrew the lines, and then Tom DeLay got the Texas legislatures to redraw them in mid. In the mid 10 years of between the census, and the Supreme Court basically went along with that. The other thing that's part of this is the Voter Rights Act, and the Justice Department basically has to sign off whenever anything in certain states, including Texas, is redistricted. And the Supreme Court upheld that, but there's a chance that next time it comes up, it may not.
Well, also, the two additional city districts, city council districts, is the same thing. There was an agreement made that once the city population was over 2 million...
Yeah, that's in the city charter.
Yes, that it would change. And that was the agreement made with the federal government. So that's why we're getting two additional ones.
So would they be new districts or new at large?
No.
We can only have, that was part of the agreement, we can only have five at-large districts, at-large council members, and the rest have to be districts.
So is there any respect given to the areas where population has grown when they draw the districts?
Well, there's going to be a lot of talk about that in the next census, that the city may be majority Hispanic.
I believe we're there.
And that, you know, right now there's only two that are Hispanic.
District I.
That's going to be a concern. Of course, the GLBT community was never really considered in any of that because we're not part of the groups that they have to worry about.
Well, Tom DeLay didn't want to worry about us unless he had a date.
I see.
So that's 2 years away.
Yeah.
Of course, we have elections coming up this year for city council, city controller, and the mayor.
Mayor.
the controller and the mayor are term limited, as is some council seats are term limited.
Oh, yeah.
So there will be new people there. And more than likely, any of those people who are running for those open seats, there'll be a runoff in December.
Absolutely. So, and then immediately after that, into the new year of 2010, we have a primary coming up in, is it going to be the 1st of April or March? There'll be primaries again for statewide and local
elections. Is that for
elections?
Governor?
Governor. Yeah. 2010 is for governor, and as well as all representatives in the legislature and in the Senate. State legislature, state senate, to make that clear, as well as our representatives in Washington, our congressmen.
There was a piece in the paper that I found rather interesting. It said that the voting was, when you talk about the percentage of the population, the voting of the last national election was actually down a little bit compared to 4 years ago. Everybody thought this was a really, really big election.
Yeah.
The presidential election was down?
The presidential election.
I'm surprised.
There were more people voting, but when you actually look at it as a percentage of the population, there was, it showed that 63.6% of eligible voters cast their votes in November, as compared to 63.8. I'm sorry, I got those numbers reversed. So it wasn't that much of a difference, but still, in that 2004, it was 63.8, and in this past year, it was 63.6. So even though there was a record turnout in the number of people voting, in the percentage of people voting who are eligible to vote, it was less.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, is it just our population grew more than our voting population? Is that why it caused it?
I tried to explain that. As a percentage, it was actually down a little bit.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I mean, the overall population of the country grew faster than the actual voting population.
I was talking about eligible voters.
All right. Got it. Okay.
Yes.
Just clarifying that. If I had to ask it, maybe someone out
well,
there.
Well, no, actually, curious. That was a good question because there could have been more younger people.
Exactly.
Yes.
There's
yes,
a whole
yes.
lot of variations. Yes.
There is
in
lots
that.
Of different
you know,
variations.
Well, I guess one of these days we need to get someone who's really in depth in statistics, a local somebody, and
statistician.
You want to put our audience to sleep?
are they already asleep?
No, our interview will keep them awake and keep them enthralled.
Not everybody's as interested in the numbers like we are.
Okay.
Well, we have, what, five listeners, so we got to keep four of the five up.
Well, I call them and wake them up periodically.
We have to do that. Well, you know, I've been trying to recruit listeners from, you know, Facebook, and I've recruited someone from the far reaches of Conroe.
I wonder if these people out here listening to us know about our Facebook.
I don't know, but
let me
give a shout out to my friend Pat in Conroe, because I met him this weekend and I told him about the show and he said he would listen. But the other thing I'm doing is working on Facebook, and we're at 410 members
too. Oh, good, good.
So we're trying to reach out, get a different demographic.
Well, all our members need to send out one inviting all of their friends.
Yes.
To join our Facebook.
And we have 54 on Twitter. So
so between the two, we might have almost 500 listeners.
That's right, which is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Well, we do a lot of work on the show to give you the best
The other thing we were talking about is the movie Bruno.
Oh, yes.
Who saw it?
I didn't see it. I wasn't going to pay for it.
I saw it.
Yes.
It is utterly homophobic trash. You can quote me on that.
Okay. We will.
I mean it's every single stereotype, cliche about gay people, and it's not funny.
Was it worth your money?
Well, I saw it because my friends were talking about it, and I wanted to speak intelligently about it on the radio. But it's just the worst.
Well,
I don't like to perpetuate the stereotype, yeah. And that movie goes all out.
Well, you know that for a deal to you out there, you go and watch it. If you leave before it finishes, you can ask for your money back.
Is that
the
true?
The interesting
yes, you can.
Thing is that movies pretty much make it or break it in the first week.
Yeah.
But now it's even progressing. Now it has to make it or break it in Friday, because people tweet about these movies.
Right, and that's why they do those early releases, like on Wednesday.
Yes. Well, and my understanding was the last week it was the number one movie, and this week it dropped down to number five.
And that's very indicative, I think, of the word of mouth.
Yes,
I think.
And probably the people who went to see it didn't know that it was worth seeing. They didn't listen to their friends. Or they couldn't believe what their friends said. They had to see it for themselves. Sort of like I was.
Exactly. Well, you know, last week we had Legacy on.
Yes.
Talked about their Miss Mint
Julep.
Sure did. And I attended that yesterday, and it was a fantastic event. And I think they raised about $40,000.
Oh, that is
so
wonderful.
Drag does raise the money. $1 at a time.
Oh.
It was at the BRB. And
that's a lot of $1.
They had some of their board members dress up who I thought would not be pretty women, but magic of drag and mascara, I guess.
The magic of makeup.
It really...
We girls can be tens anytime we want.
Exactly. And I was impressed. So that was a good event.
So what we got coming up next week? We can just sort of tease the people.
Well, next week is our Queer Music Heritage with J.D., and I know he's already put the show together because he was sending me emails. So a lot of thought goes into putting that together once a month at the end of the month.
J.D. used to be here in the studio with us till he
moved to the far reaches of the woodlands.
Yes. Well, he went up there to infiltrate the woodlands with our Gatum.
To start a colony out there. A
colony of gays up there.
Yes.
Move on the Gatum. And so he sends in his work. And thank you, J.D. We love you.
Yes, we love you and all the queer music.
Oh, yes. And you
send
can
us
go
new
to
music.
Well, you can go to his website, too, at Queer Music Heritage. And you can hear some of his stuff and hear some of his interviews right there.
Yes. Always very informative and entertaining.
And anything? What else is going on next week?
Well, we're starting to plan for the month of August.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a couple of events that are coming up. The Kindred Spirits event. LSVA, Lone Star Volleyball Association, is doing an event. We're going to work on getting somebody from the Victory Fund on.
Yes.
Next couple of weeks.
I'll talk with Chuck Wolf and see if we can get him on and see what the Victory Fund's doing around the United States, as well in local races here in Houston, as well as the rest of Texas.
What local races are of concern to the Victory Fund?
Well, on their sheet, it's Anise Parker.
Anise Parker.
Yes, Anise Parker running for mayor. I am not sure, but I would think that... Sue Lovell might be involved in Victory Fund also.
Absolutely.
I would think so.
The mayor pro tem.
But yes, mayor pro tem, as well as, at this time, as I understand it, with Sue and Anise, and there are six other openly gay...
And this is the gay election, but we need to keep it quiet.
Shh. Well, it's not. It's the fact that, well, I think that this says something about our city, that it's a progressive city, no matter what some people
think.
Can
you imagine the national headlines... If Anise gets elected, Houston elects first openly gay lesbian mayor.
I think it would be wonderful. I think it would send a message all over the United States that we aren't the town of Bubba's anymore.
I could just see the people in New York going, Houston?
Houston, yes. Well, the other thing is that it's the acknowledgement that the city of Houston has progressed to a level that people feel comfortable that they can actually run for office.
Well, you know, I feel like Houston inside the loop is like a little blue dot in a sea of red.
Well, if you look at statistically in the precincts around the city, there's a whole lot more blue than we expect. I mean, as far as countywide, too. It's rather interesting look. Very much like a map of the state of Texas is, where you see Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, El Paso, parts of San Antonio. You know, there's this area, but you know, once you get below I-10, it just sort of loses something in the translation.
Mm-hmm.
But
you know, I'd heard something about Anise raising more money for the financial reporting period than anyone else. She didn't have as much money on hand, but she raised more for more supporters.
It's an interesting way you have to look at those numbers.
Yeah.
Actually, another candidate had more money,
right?
But some of it was self-funding.
Right, and does that translate into votes at the end of the day?
That's a question I don't know that I could answer, but I would think that having more people donate, the total numbers...
More supporters.
Sort of translates into more votes on election day.
Absolutely.
Very much like Obama did.
Exactly.
You know, he had millions contributing small amounts in the average, averaging small amounts, I mean, and it translated into an incredible amount of votes on election day.
Absolutely, and I think that's a good model for our local race.
Well, let's hope we keep it that way.
There is a networking group meeting coming up with the community networking that's coming up in the Saturday of August.
First Saturday of August.
It's from 1 to 5 p.m.
I'm going to miss this one, too.
That's happening at the community center.
It's a lot of fun. It's a couple of hours, but it's kind of the meeting of the mind, so to speak, and it's kind of talking about the future of the community.
Well,
it's very interesting.
Anybody can come to it, and if you can come and go, you don't have to stay the full time. I come and contribute. If all you can do is contribute an hour, contribute an hour.
You can listen to Ray Hill talk for a couple of hours. It's always
I can. I have lunch periodically with Ray, and that's what I do. I listen.
It's like a little history lesson.
Well, it's more than a history lesson.
He's got some interesting stories.
There's a great deal of wisdom that comes from Ray as far as this, politics and the social environment in Houston.
And activism.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So that's the first Saturday in August?
The second Saturday, August 8th.
Oh, perfect.
August 8th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the community center, which is at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207.
Okay.
So, there's parking in the back of the building in the garage there.
Well, just one thing. Lawrence Marshall, president of the HISD school board, has not returned my phone call.
And what was the phone call regarding?
I have been trying for 3 weeks now to get an appointment with him to sit down and talk to him about adding GLBT language to the HISD's non-discrimination statement. They currently don't have sexual orientation, gender identity, expression in there, and so I have been working and lobbying for about 8 months, almost 9 months now, to ask them, to request from them that they, in fact, increase the language. The response I've gotten so far has just been simply that we have all the protections that are currently in law.
Interesting.
Which is a cop-out.
Well, there are no protections in law. So no protections in law equal no protections in the schools, I guess.
That's exactly right. They did, in fact, add sexual orientation to the student book of conduct.
Okay, let's play a little piece of music.
Yes.
And then we're going to come back and do our interview with Paul Scott from Equality Texas. You're listening to Queer Voices. Thank you.
wrong was I feel like this.
Some fresh queer music there from Ray Bolts, and the title of this track, Don't Tell Me Who to Love, and that's from a single of his that was released this year. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Linka.
And we're on the phone with Paul Scott, Director of Equality Texas. Paul, welcome.
Good evening, Jennifer. Good evening, Brian.
How are you?
I am doing all right.
Hey, you've been a busy Equality Texas, and you, too, have been busy this year. Tell us something about what's going on in the rest of Texas.
Well, I think everybody's been following, you know, things that have been happening post-legislative session. I think some of the things that we've been working on are the aftermath of the Fort Worth raid, as well as some of the incident that happened at the Chico's restaurant in El Paso, and in working with local groups and organizations in those areas to support some outreach and education of our local law enforcement departments in El Paso and in Fort Worth, and supporting the Fairness Fort Worth Alliance up there as well. That has been taking up a lot of time, as well as working statewide in terms with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission and dealing with, you know, their participation in the Fort Worth raid as well.
Yeah, well, we were fortunate enough to have Joel Burns, city council member from Openly Gay, city council member from Fort Worth, on last week, and we talked about that. And it was interesting because one of my questions to you was, how has the TABC been in interacting with them?
I think TBC has, as you may have heard on Friday, came out with a statement in the Dallas Voice, mm-hmm. An article that was fairly impressive in terms of the candor in terms of how they handle things inappropriately. Some of these things we knew from the very beginning in terms of some of the procedural matters that they had kind of violated their own rules in terms of wearing the state police uniforms. They weren't supposed to be doing that. And I think the candor that was shown in terms of that statement is a beginning step. We, as an organization, are also working with the ACLU to request records of the investigation from the TABC and getting in an idea of exactly kind of what happened and how those records were kept. I think also what we're looking at, though, is in terms of, you know, what is kind of the policy in terms of the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and what can we do as an organization in terms of educating them and working with them, whether it's, you know, Fort Worth or whether this, these incidents happen, in terms of working within the community and outreach into the gay and lesbian community to have more effective and outward relationships with the organizations, both state as well as local.
Have you been able to find out, were they not cognizant of the fact that it was the 40th anniversary of Stonewall? Were they just oblivious to that?
I think that's still part of the investigation. I think that, you know, we may find out more about that in terms of what maybe the Fort Worth Police Department knew versus what TABC may have known. I think, you know, the initial statement was is that we know with Fort Worth that there was notice that there was going to be a code inspection but not this wholesale kind of number of police officers coming in and TABC officers coming in with a paddy wagon and plastic handcuffs ready to arrest people. I think that's where the concern is. I think everyone has the expectation, the bar owner at the Rainbow Lounge had the expectation that there was going to be a code inspection, but this was this was not a code inspection. This was well beyond that.
Yeah, because there, I've been up to Fort Worth before, and there were several C&W bars that they could have done the same thing and had three times as many people in handcuffs.
Well, it's like history.
And it was a straight place, of course.
It's like history repeating itself.
Were they trying to start their own Stonewall in Texas?
Texas version.
I think in this case, you know, obviously they had hit two other establishments earlier, but not with the same degree of kind of force that was seen. I think there were seven previous arrests that evening at the two other establishments. I don't know, you know, I don't think anyone knows really to what degree they knew it was Stonewall, or if they did know it was Stonewall, like which department knew. I would not think necessarily, I know this is all supposition on my part, but I'm not sure whether or not that would have been on TABC's radar necessarily, in terms of, and I don't know what degree they had met between TABC and Fort Worth and laying out their plan for the evening. I think that's the whole point of why we're calling for an independent investigation along with Fairness Fort Worth, to have an objective review outside of these two departments to see what happened, because we've still have had some discrepancies between the two departments.
Well, one of the things, and to move on to another subject now, down here, the focus of this year coming up is our city elections with Anise Parker on the running for mayor. But in the rest of the state, you know, we're sort of got our blinders on. What's going on in the rest of the state?
Well, I think of the rest of the state, what we're looking at in terms of, I mean, we as a statewide organization, we're going to be continuing to working on our Safe Schools Initiative and our Safe School Forums, organizing for the early fall in Dallas, San Antonio, and I know that Lindsay Marsh, who's our field organizer, is working with people in Houston to organize this. And I know, Jennifer, you've been doing some great work within the Houston ISD as well. And I think this is one of those areas that we need to continue to work on anti-bullying and harassment policies on the statewide level and working within independent school districts case by case in order to have really effective anti-bullying and harassment policies. And I think we see some of this happening in the communities, you know, where we had an incident happen in El Paso during the legislative session where at Hanks High School in the Isleta district, where a Gay Straight Alliance faculty member was found a letter that was a death threat on this letter when he came back from spring break, basically saying that if you continue to meet here, there are going to be fewer of you, there are going to be less of you meeting here. Very articulated, very much an articulated death threat, where we involved our state representatives, Marissa Marquez and Joe Moody, in that discussion and having some discussions with the Isleta district superintendent as well, and still continuing to work on, you know, how we as an organization, as well as working with local organizations, can educate the elected officials, school officials about these issues, and how these issues could escalate into violent situations that are really horrendous circumstances for the school. And working with the schools, understand that burying your head in the sand and trying to keep a quote clean record by not reporting something or not dealing with it is only going to cause more problems in the long run.
Well, in my efforts with HISD, it's been brought to my attention from a number of different sources that the incidence of bullying is, most of it's been covered up because it reflects on the principal if they claim it to be on a bullying incident. And what they do is they claim it that one of the individuals, usually the gay person, is a troublemaker and tries to have them shipped off to an alternate school.
Right, and I think that's where we've seen Barbara Paris is an advocate that we work with. She is a principal of a middle school up in the Round Rock area, but she's also part of the Bully Police organization. And, you know, and she has been working with the Our Safe Schools Coalition, and in their situation, you know, they really kind of do this very comprehensive, nip it in the bud before it begins, so that you don't have what you're talking about in terms of having to report these incidents of bullying and harassment in terms of them being more of an escalated situation. You know, they deal with it immediately, and it's, you know, like very kind of, I wouldn't say the most, you know, minute of infractions, but fairly, you know, fairly insignificant in terms of what we would normally consider incidents are really addressed and dealt with in terms of how you treat people and how, and teaching kids how that's inappropriate to treat one another. And there are immediate consequences to that, and it really has changed their school environment significantly, and that's happened in other school districts as well. And, you know, the whole point of this is that kids can get a, you know, an education and have a safe learning environment to do that, as well as that the victim is not punished, it's the perpetrator is the one that is dealt with. One example of this is, like, in some school districts and across the country, you know, they do this kind of peer counseling where they'll bring in the bully and the victim into the room and have them work it out together. Well, that's not going to work.
No.
Because it's like asking a rapist and a rape victim to come into the room together and say, y'all work it out. You never ask the victim to be put into yet another situation
right.
where they're going to be victimized and where the perpetrator can look like the martyr. And
oh,
that's
absolutely.
What
and then, yeah. Get outside the
that's
door.
Such
and,
a, that's such a shame that yeah. that happened. You know, one of the things, too, is that you have a mentality within the system. That system, you know, systemic in that the principal may not believe that, or individuals in administration may not believe that sexual orientation, gender identity should be any kind of protected. And, you know, they sort of deserve what they get. That's been something. I'm quoting someone I heard that from.
Hmm.
Well, and you're talking about two things here. I mean, you're talking about actual sexual orientation and gender identity or expression, and you know, of course, it's so much bigger than this in terms of you know, many victims of bullying and harassment may not be gay or may not have may not be dealing with gender identity or expression as it may be a perception of it. It may be the issue of wearing a pink shirt, or it may be just the issue of someone being, you know, characterized in a certain way. And that is what we're working with our Safe Schools Coalition and our partners, with the education partners and parent partners and organization partners, is that, you know, the victims are not relegated to those that are specifically GLBT. It's really any kid that's, there's a perception of this, or treated as if, you know, that's so gay, or you're not feminine enough, or you're not male enough, whatever that characterization may be.
Well, another thing too is that the, and I don't want to take the side of a bully, but, you know, they're victimized too. They have been indoctrinated into a way of thinking that's contrary to appropriate social values, and it has to come from their
you're
home environment.
It's taught.
It's taught to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't come out of the womb hating gays.
Yeah. No, you don't. I mean, and of course, that's the whole second prong to this whole of this issue is we need to address this in the schools because it has to be addressed somewhere. But then there's the other issue of, as a society, as well as within the home itself, is really raising in the next generation to have this respect. And have this ability to treat one another with that respect and not victimize people because they're different. And I think that's something that we will continue to always, whatever the issue may be, continue to be the goal, is that we respect one another despite or appreciate our differences, basically, and incorporate that into the diversity within our school systems and our community.
Just quickly for our audience, if someone wants to get involved with that, how would they get in touch with you and to become part of the solution?
I think, first of all, make sure you get on our e-newsletter list. I mean, it's first thing on the page, on our homepage at equalitytexas.org. Sign up to get information. Make sure you sign up to get our education alerts and our action alerts as well, and so that, you know, we can get you engaged. Second thing is, obviously, if there's going to be a program in your area, and there are going to be some new programs that we'll be launching come the fall and into the winter, as we prepare for the next legislative session in 2011. But become engaged and learn about the issues and why they're important for each person to be an advocate. And the third thing I would encourage everyone to do, and I'm going to repeat this over and over until I'm blue in the face, but the value of speaking up and yes. going to your representative mm-hmm. And having a conversation at their district office, whether it's Ellen Cohen, Garnett Coleman, Jessica Farrar, you know, any of those folks in Houston, you know, Christy Thiebau, any of those people over there, is such immense value, because first of all, they are the ones standing out on the limb protecting us and trying to fight for our rights, and we need to make sure they know that we're there. And what we are working with our membership on is go in to tell your story and say you care about these issues and that you want them to vote for equality and that you support their work on equality. Because I remember one thing that Representative Ellen Cohen told me, it was like, you know, during the last interim, she didn't have any gay and lesbian people come to her office and talk to her.
Oh, my God, we need to change that.
Oh, we have to change that.
And, you know, we need to make sure that we're here, you know, calling her up, calling, you know, Representative Coleman up, calling all these representatives up that are working for us and standing up for us, and letting them know that we appreciate it, but also let them know that we're standing behind them, and sometimes that we're going to be standing in front of them, and that we're going to be paving the way for this so that they can vote. And make sure that the other representatives can vote in order to support equality, because we're getting closer and closer. This is really was a good session for us, and we felt like, particularly on the bullying, anti-bullying and harassment, you know, we were the victim of unrelated, you know, time issues to that bill on anti-bullying and harassment, it would have passed.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with Paul Scott, Director of Equality Texas. Now, Paul, you've sort of segued into it. It's never too early to be thinking about 2010. Is there anything else on some of the other issues in the next legislature that we can be working toward at this time?
Okay, the first thing, which is was an interesting report I heard today, was in terms of the voter turnout in this past election. There was a lot of discussion about how voter turnout had increased across the country. But actually, when they adjusted for the population increase, it was down. Actually, voter turnout was down 0.2% from 2004. And the reason why I bring that up is because 2010 is going to be an off-presidential election.
Right.
And people need to, A, become registered if they're not registered, but remember to vote again, because this election is determinative of what happens in terms of the districts, the redrawing of districts, not only at the state level, but also the congressional level. And that's why we need to make sure we get out there and vote in order to have a strong turnout, as well as this is really taking advantage of a changing positive attitude about equality issues at the Capitol. Our conversations, because of the work our members have done, as well as the work that we've been doing over the last 3 years, is really starting to pay off, and we need to keep that momentum going so that we can work on getting gender identity into the James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Law, that we can get the gender marker bill, which we had bipartisan support on this session.
That was very gratifying.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. So, I mean, we're making such some good advances, but we need to make sure we keep that momentum going, getting people involved so that we can take advantage of it. And it really takes the work now, not only in the election in 2010, but also paving the way for the legislative work that we need to be doing in 2011.
Well, we need to ask the questions now of our legislators, as well as the ones that may be candidates for some of the positions, to make sure that they're aware of our issues and where they stand.
Right, and then also I think, you know, whether it's 2010 or 2012, anyone out there listening or anyone you may know of that you think is a potentially great candidate to run for office that's gay or lesbian or transgender, we need to make sure that we have representation in the legislature. I mean, Utah has it, Arkansas has it, Alabama has it. In Texas, we don't have any openly gay or lesbian or transgender person serving in the House or Senate right now. And that's one thing that we as organization are going to be working to support and hoping, you know, and working to identify along with great organizations like the Victory Fund, and so that we can elect an openly gay and lesbian and transgender folks into our state capitol to represent our interests and have a presence not only as an organization and as membership, but also we have elected officials up there as well.
Paul, can you give us the website for our listeners so they can find out more information about Equality Texas?
Sure, Brian. It's equalitytexas.org, www.equalitytexas.org.
Well, thank you, Paul, for all the work that you do on the state level and for all the work that you're doing for GOBT Texans.
Well, great. Thank you all for what you are doing. This is a great medium to get the word out.
Well, anytime you've got something, give us a call, and we'll see about getting you on. It's always a pleasure having you on.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
I played with my Barbie when I was a kid. It sure was the most fun thing that I ever did. But when Daddy found out, boy, he flipped his lid. I should have been born a girl. My Daddy, he said, are you my daughter or son? And I said, oh, Daddy, do I have to pick one? Then I'll be your daughter. It's so much more fun. I should have been born a girl. You have to understand I have a feminine side. And feeling soft and pretty isn't something to hide. I like wearing makeup, it covers my flaws. I go get a facial to close up my pores. I dress as a woman, I do it because I should have been born a girl. Although I'm a fella, I carry a purse. I don't get my period, but something much worse. Too much testosterone is really the curse. I should have been born a girl. So who am I? I often sit and wonder. Did nature make a terrible blunder? I just got a letter, I read it, and wow, I've just been accepted as a member of NOW. Although I'm a fella, I joined anyhow. I should have been born a girl. Well, I think I have the answer, so that when I get home, I'll look through all the want ads for an X chromosome. I'd love to be female, think I'll give it a whirl. I should have been born a girl.
That is Jennifer Renee's theme song. That's Miss Kooky, I Should Have Been Born a Girl, the title track from her 2002 CD. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy.
You know, I think sometimes we should have a camera so people, like, record and broadcast your little dance movements.
Oh, I don't think so. And also, my theme song is One from a Chorus Line.
Oh, yes.
That's the one.
Well, this is Brian Laminka.
This is Jennifer Renee.
And
we're having fun tonight on Queer Voices.
We always have fun. And one of the fun things I like to do is to travel. And in the studio tonight, we have my friend Juan Alvarado, who has a new gay travel service. Can you tell us about that, Juan?
Yeah, it's called staywithfamily.com,
uh-huh.
And what it is it provides a venue for gay travelers to meet other travelers and home exchange. So it's an affordable, inexpensive way of traveling, and I think a much more fun way of traveling. You can swap homes. You can just offer up a spare bedroom. Or if you have a vacation home or a timeshare, you can swap it out with other members.
This sounds like the movie with Cameron Diaz, The Holiday, where she went to London England.
I've heard that a lot, and I know you're not going to believe me, but I've never seen the movie.
Well, you need to see the movie. It'll give you inspiration.
Right.
Now, where did this idea come from?
Well, my partner and I, Bill, we love to travel. We love to explore different cultures. And we found that whenever we traveled somewhere where we actually knew someone who lived there, or we, you know, made some really good friends there, we always enjoyed the vacation way more than had we just stayed in a hotel. We got to see, you know, local places that tourists don't go to.
Yeah, where the locals go.
Right. And so, you know, we would... On our way back, we think, you know, we talk, and I'd say to him, you know, I wish there was a way we could meet people in these locations before we got there, you know, or make connections or have friends in these destinations, so that not only could we stay for free and travel more, because, you know, 9 times out of 10, your hotel costs are just outrageous and cost more than the flight. So that's where the idea kind of came from, and I thought, you know, what could we do to meet people in these, you know, locations that we want to travel to? And so I thought, well, maybe we need some sort of social networking site that would lend itself to that.
I see. So if I'm planning a trip to, like, New York, I can go on there and find people in New York, and then
exactly.
How does that work?
The way it's set up is it's a free membership, basic membership, so you can go on there and search the profile. So when you register, you... upload pictures of yourself.
Important.
Right. Yeah, we try to keep those clean pictures.
I see.
You also upload information, a description of yourself, and there's some already pre-generated questions, you know, to kind of, you know, are you a smoker and that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah. And then you also upload pictures of your property and descriptions of your home. So if you're going to New York, you'd go to, you'd put in New York, and then a page would pop up with all the members from New York with pictures of themselves and descriptions, and you can go through the profiles. If you see someone that you think you might be a good match with as far as staying in their home, you can email them. We have an internal mailbox all set up, so our site is actually set up to make it a safe way of meeting other people without giving your personal information out right away, so you don't get these stalkers or someone, you know, harassing you. So they don't get your email address, they don't get your phone number, they don't get your home address. We have an internal mailbox, and you can block users if, you know, if you don't want someone to contact you. So you initiate contact, and to do that, you have to have a premium membership.
Oh.
But it's free to search the site. It's also going to be set up with instant messaging, video chat rooms, so you can actually see the people. There's forums for just asking travel questions. You know, you may not even want to stay with someone, but you just are wondering, you know, you're going to Amsterdam, you've never been there, what do I do, where should I stay, is it safe in this sort of area?
Those brownies.
Right. You can go on there and ask those sort of questions. And so... it's free to be a member, but if you want to be able to initiate contact with someone on the site, then you pay for a membership.
I see.
Well, that sounds interesting, because even if you're, like, using the New York metaphor, if you're going there and you're going to stay in a hotel, but you would like to meet somebody you already know there, and you could meet that person, y'all could get together, have dinner, and maybe they could help you get around New York and show you some things if they have the time. That's, you know, because that, you're right. If you know someone there when you get there, it makes the vacation so much nicer.
And if you can stay with someone, you could save hundreds of dollars, literally, in New York for a hotel.
Well, if it was Hawaii, thousands.
Yeah.
Well, we did an exchange this past year with a couple out of Stockholm. And it was the greatest experience. You know, we stayed with them. They cooked for us. We cooked for them because, you know, they really hadn't had Mexican food. And so that was an adventure. They took us to the grocery store there in Stockholm trying to find Mexican...
There's no cilantro in Stockholm.
Exactly.
Or jalapenos.
I think we paid like $10 for a little can of green chilies. And it was a very expensive dinner, but it was fun. And, you know, and they introduced us to local friends, and they took us to these local bars that, you know, that they go to, that, you know, the tourists don't...
Where all the blondes are.
And the cool beach. beaches and the that we wouldn't have found the little nude beach and that you've kind of got to go through the little path in the woods to find. But I mean, it was a fun experience.
Did you go to the IKEA there?
Oh, no. That's terrible.
I know. God. What did you show them here? Like, when people, did they come here?
They've not been here, but they are welcome to come stay with us. We already told them. And actually, they have another home in South Africa that they've invited us to go to during the winter because they spend their winters in South Africa.
That's good because people in Houston travel, but maybe those people may not want to come to Houston.
Right?
Because we're not really a destination city.
Well, actually, you know, we have already been doing some hosting for other families, like some cancer families, since we have the medical center here.
Right.
We've hosted at least two different families that come down here and get treatments at the cancer center, and that's been a really great experience for us and for them as well.
Well, it is a destination. Unfortunately, it might be a final destination.
It sounds like a new thing. Is this a new concept in gay travel?
You know, I've heard that it's been around. We thought of it probably about 4 years ago, and it's taken a while to kind of get it all built. And the we had some problems in the beginning with the first programmer that we had hired to build the site for us was actually a company here, and we tried to keep the money within the gay community, right. And so I hired this gay programmer here who actually stole our money.
Oh, no.
And so we had to start over. But I've heard it's been around more in Europe than it has been here. And I think the Europeans are more open to these sort of things, and it's starting to kind of spread here in the States.
I'm kind of weird. I think I would be kind of weirded out by staying in someone else's house and then them coming to my house. Because I like the kind of the hotel thing. But.
Do you stay in bed and breakfasts?
No, we stay in hotels.
Okay. Well, we always stayed a lot in bed and breakfasts. Even when we were staying in hotels, we always tried to find the gay hotel or the gay bed and breakfast. And so this really isn't much different because bed and breakfasts are usually like someone's home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not been anything weird for us. It's been a great experience.
So how long has this been going on now?
Well, the site, we just launched it 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. So it's brand new, basically.
Brand new. I mean, I've been working on it for almost 4 years, but it just launched, and we already have over 210 members worldwide. I mean, it's just been really rewarding.
Hopefully you'll get lots more after tonight's show.
Well, tonight, we have millions of listeners out there on the Internet.
Yeah. You'll have to join our Facebook site.
I've already
announced it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Did you already put it on Facebook?
I think I invited them, and I'm going to put a link on there.
Well, I'm learning this whole technology thing. I'm not really technologically savvy, but I'm learning about the Facebook thing. I've gotten on there, and now today I think I posted it on Twitter.
Yes.
Twitter. Yeah. And so I'm learning that.
You fooled me. I thought you were like this technical nerd.
No, I'm not.
You tweeted everybody. Yes, I got that.
Right.
Well, it sounds like you're having fun, and I guess with travel being your passion, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it does. That's kind of, I had always heard that if you wanted your own business, you really needed to define something that you're passionate about,
right,
and find a need and then fill it. And so that's what's worked for me, and I love it. It doesn't really feel, I probably am working more now than I've ever worked before, but it doesn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really enjoy it.
Now, how are you getting the word out here in Houston? I mean, what are some of your...
Really just networking.
Okay.
I had...
Coming on our show.
Yeah.
Queer Voices is the...
Yeah. Luckily, I have a lot of good friends with, big mouths, and they just kind of spread the word. And like I said, every day, I mean, I get new people joining in parts of the world that I've never even been to.
That's interesting.
And I don't know these people, and it's just really rewarding.
How
to
did they connect with you? Do you get any feedback on how they found you?
I get something. I have a little referral area when they sign up, and I've some of it, friends. I see a lot of friends. Different things like that, so I really don't know. It's just word of mouth.
It's crazy how, even Facebook has become this phenomenon where just people are just networking, and it's becoming just this crazy machine.
It's awesome.
Sociality.
Yeah.
Now, with this, what do you envision it in the long term?
What is the future?
What's the future look like? Paint the future for us so that everybody can see your vision.
Well, as far as... I hope that it's something that'll enable me to retire and travel the world. But I hope that it's something that a lot of travelers will use, even if they don't plan to swap homes with someone. There's so much that can be used still, just as far as, like I said, finding out where to go, what to do in certain cities. Something along that lines.
What if there's a city that you want to go to and you don't see a host there? How do you, identify a host in a target city?
Well, if I don't have any hosts in certain cities, I'm trying. That's where I'm going to try to focus some of my marketing. So,
yeah.
The areas that I don't have much activity in is where I'll probably spend more of my advertising dollars to get the word out.
Mm. Now, if I wanted to go somewhere, Billings, Montana, okay, and
why?
There's no one, I wouldn't want to go there. But okay, it's someplace really out of the way, which is unusual. Can I post something on there saying, hey, I'm thinking of traveling to Billings, Montana. Does anybody know anybody up there?
You could definitely go to the forum section of the website, and that's kind of set up into different categories, and there's travel in the U.S. You could definitely go in there and post, does anyone know anyone? And, what is it called?
Billings, Montana. I was going to go to Lahui, Kauai, Hawaii. That would be a good one.
Or you could even let me know, because I really try to run the site much like a family. The name is staywithfamily.com.
Staywithfamily.com.
And some people have asked me, how did you come up with the name? And the name, actually, for the gay community, we identify the word family, kind of code for gay.
It is your family.
Yeah.
Like your quote-unquote
right
family.
Because for so long, gays, many times were ostracized from their family. They had to create their own family of choice. So we've adopted this word family. But it has a double meaning in my site, because not only does it mean gay, it also means we're creating this international family of friends. So I try to operate the site in that way, where I interact with the members, I use my name, I really try to be their friend. So anyone can easily email me and say, hey, I see that you don't have any members in such and such city. I'm kind of want to go there. Then I can start working and doing my networking to try to find members in those cities.
Sounds like you're very outgoing person, so I think this is kind of right up your alley.
I definitely agree with you.
And give me that website again, so
it's
we'll know.
www.staywithfamily.com.
Staywithfamily.com.
Yeah. Staywithfamily.com.
And I like that.
And I would like to offer all the listeners a discount. So for anyone who wants to register, right now, actually, I have free premium memberships until the end of July, and after that, they would still have a free basic membership. But if they wanted a premium membership, you would pay. But I'd like to offer the members of Queer Voices, the listeners of Queer Voices, a discount by putting in the promo code Queer Voices, and they'd get 50% off.
Well, thank you. That's great. That's great for everybody out there. Everybody on our Facebook. This is your time to jump for that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Very good. Well, I love travel, and I suggest that our listeners go to your website and check it out. Anything else, Juan, you want to tell our listeners?
Well, could I comment on the previous story that you
all had? Sure. You asked. We give you permission. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was walking in, and I heard your story, and it kind of struck me because, it was about gay bullying, and I thought it was really interesting because I was a teacher this year at an HISD school, Lamar High School, and I lost my job there because I stood up against gay bullying, and they actually pulled my certification because of it. And that's kind of actually what helped drive me with this business, is because I wanted to be in an arena where I didn't feel like my sexuality would come, hurt me. It would actually be an asset. But it is a very serious thing in high schools. I saw it firsthand.
Well, in HISD, if you ask them, that doesn't happen.
Well,
and the fact that you lost your job because of it doesn't happen either.
Yeah.
They'll swear to you that this doesn't happen. They're totally mistaken when I bring instances like that to them.
Right.
That their head is so stuck so far in the ground that they just don't want to see anything.
Right.
They're still in Egypt, denial.
That's funny.
And I even approached HISD about it, and nothing was ever done.
Well, the code of conduct for the students says you can't bully because of sexual orientation, yet they don't enforce it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And if the gay child is injured, like this boy that was beaten up and put in the hospital, he's the one that gets transferred to another school
mm-hmm.
as being a troublemaker.
Right. So.
Hey, what can we say? Thank you for sharing that.
Well, and you know, it's about the stories that come out and, you know, the activism and kind of getting, you know, representation and protection.
It's that it's that kind of story, your story. It's timely that you came. It's that story that needs to be put forward, and people need to be talking about the instances, not let HISD get away with sticking their head in the sand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing
Juan,
that.
Juan, we thank you for coming on and talking about your new travel website, staywithfamily.com.
Thank you for having me.
And hopefully we'll get some, you know, listeners out there going to gay travel.
Hope so. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Juan.
This is Queer Voices.
Whitley's, Whitley's, Whitley's. Mouth to mouth and cheek to cheek. Let us feel the joy now.
Disco-y songette there for Brian. That was Boy Loves Boy from a fellow named Bimbo Boy out of Sweden, a CD single released just this year. This is Queer Voices.
Okay, I take offense to that, Glenn.
Yeah, Bimbo Boy? Come on, Brian.
No. Boy Loves Boy. It's disco-y.
You're smearing
me. Oh, okay.
Well, I do love boys, and I am a boy, so...
And I like disco.
And you like disco.
I love disco.
Yes. So there you go.
Well, as Glenn so eloquently put it, this is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And joining us in the studio is Bo Miller, who is the founder of a nonprofit organization recently in the last year. And Bo, tell us what it is and what do you do?
Thank you for having me. We fight HIV stigma.
Stigma. And what is the name of the organization?
Live Consortium.
I see. And where did that name come from?
It was the only legal name we could get at the time.
Well, that's not a good. I thought it come from the passion to live in a world free of stigma.
It does. It comes from living a life that you should live in a consortium, which is two or more people that come for a common purpose. And so people that come for the purpose of living.
I see. So we're kind of, I guess with HIV, we're transitioning into a more long-term living and kind of dealing with the day-to-day challenges of being HIV positive, and that's what you're fighting for.
Yes, and our whole community of HIV-affected people. So I see us as the second wave of activists, where the first wave was dealing with the dying and trying to live aspect in the 80s and 90s, and now we're dealing with breaking through the social barriers so that we can actually live that life that those people died for and died for us to attain. So, but not only just the people with HIV, but also their affected individuals.
Absolutely. Now, how do you reach people with your organization?
We use Facebook.
Facebook.
And we Twitter, or however you say it.
I guess you tweet on Twitter.
I'm not a bird, but yeah, we do tweet. I'm being told how to do that. We also have these things called Live Socials. We had one last week, which we had at Bar 8. We had 100 people show up.
It was wonderful.
You were there. Thank you for coming.
It's, you know, it's a bar that I would never really maybe step foot in, a straight bar. But, you know, it was a great venue.
And that's what we're trying to do is take straight venues and invite a cross-section of people so that we have straights, gays, women, men, positive, negatives, and combine them all in one group.
You know, kind of blurring the lines so that there's no stigma, I guess.
Exactly. And the fact that we're getting to a point where more HIV infections happen in the straight population than the gay population. So reaching that community is tough, and to do that, we have to go where they are.
I see. Yes, it was a wonderful event and a nice mix of people, but what are some of the upcoming events that you have?
Well, me and several friends just registered for the Houston Half Marathon. It's a program we're just initiating called Live Fit, and the idea is that we can live a healthy and full life, and part of that is being healthy in a wellness program. So we're going to run the half marathon, and we're going to fight HIV stigma one step at a time.
Oh, my gosh. There you go. Good segue. one step at a time. I couldn't even do like a 0.5 marathon, so I don't even imagine doing a half marathon.
Well, I ran one back in law school, and so this is the time to do it again. So we have a trainer who's training for the triathlon, the Ironman, and it's a free program. Anybody can come and just email me on the website, and Will Geiger will help us guide us through that training process.
What is the website?
www.liveconsortium.org.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
We also have Evan Thayer is doing a fundraiser for us.
I love Evan Thayer.
Who doesn't?
He's such an asset to our community.
He is. He's agreed to. We don't even have our 501c status yet. We've applied for it, so we're waiting for it. And he's agreed to do a fundraiser for us September 14th through October 9th.
Okay. September 14th. You said?
Through October 9th.
Uh-huh.
And someone can come in and get a portrait taken, a 5x7 touched up, because that's how I look best. Just in a stylist and Evan Thayer. So it's quite the deal.
Yes, we're not supposed to have the commercial aspects out on the nonprofit radio. But
oh, sorry.
That slipped through.
Well, we also have Slate, which is coming up on October 8th.
What is that?
That's our a seminar series for HIV-affected individuals. And Dr. Eric Haas is going to present on anal cancer.
Anal cancer?
Yes, it's for anybody of any sexual orientation or status. It's something that affects girls and boys, and it's becoming a huge factor for men and women alike.
How did you come about founding this organization? I mean, where did this come from?
It came from a lot of personal thought and just working through what happened in my life and why I wasn't able to come out and say, okay, I'm positive, I'm gay, I'm halfway intelligent, but I was dying from the stigma that is HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having all the best resources as medically, but I was still dying. Mm. And so what prevents others from breaking that barrier and creating that compassionate, loving society by which people can do that? And it's amazing, at the last Live Social, and this happens all the time now to me, you know, two or three a week, where people will come out of the rafters and they will thank me for doing whatever I'm doing. Maybe it's insanity, I don't know, but thank me for doing that, but they're not there yet to do that themselves. And
well, it's hard. Do you see a day when there is no stigma? I mean, I don't know how you quantify that and kind of verify that.
I think stigma is something that is self-perceived and also that society places on people. And so we're there to battle both of those. I just had a friend that was diagnosed positive, who's actually been part of our organization as a negative person. And he came over and explained to me how he sees things so differently now, now that he's been diagnosed, and what the stigma is now that he is feeling.
Oh.
And he's just newly diagnosed. So it exists, and, you know, there are different ways of people thinking how to break the stigma. We're all working together, I hope. And I do see, Brian, a time which we can all live that compassionate, loving society, which we don't have to hide in dark corners.
Well, I think, you know, as the disease progresses, I mean, it's gone from, you know, what was perceived as a gay disease to affecting many social groups. And I think our society is starting to kind of adjust to that and perceive it in that way. And I think it's seen more of as a livable disease. There's not as many, you know, we interviewed people on the radio, the younger people that didn't know anyone that was HIV positive or people that have died from HIV AIDS. So I think, you know, we're kind of transitioning with the disease.
Certainly, and that age group, of course, the half the new infections are in the age group of 15 to 24-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are learning more about it every day as their friends become positive, and it's really an epidemic in that age group.
Well, when you're that age, you're indestructible.
Well, aren't you?
At least you think so.
Well, I'm at 36. I'm going to run the marathon. but they're also not knowledgeable of the past, I think, as much.
Well, I think we quickly forget, you know, what the disease did in the 80s and 90s.
But they were just children. They were not born then.
Exactly. So, you know, we just forget, and history repeats itself. And I'm very fearful of a drug-resistant strain.
Yes.
I'm very concerned about that. I think, you know, there could be a second wave of deaths.
Well, and the misconception that HIV-positive people can have sex,
yes,
bareback with HIV positive people.
Yeah, I know. I think, you know, we're seeing more of that in like the videos. Like, they never used to see unprotected sex, and now you see it all the time. And I'm just like, you know, we're becoming used to that, and it's this apathy that's growing in our community, which I'm afraid of.
Or it's excuses in order to do that behavior, even in this, even the negative community. You know, get your test, and we can have fun without condoms, and the fact is that test is only as good as, you know, 3 months ago.
Right.
That's right.
So it's these abilities, these misconceptions of, or lack of thought.
Well, and I think we're getting to a point where there's this safe sex fatigue. You know, our gay community started in the 70s with this kind of liberation of freedom, and then, you know, HIV hit, and then we went away, and it's kind of this years and years of this added barrier.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it, too. I mean, we're talking about HIV now, but you've got Hep C and a whole myriad of other diseases that are dangerous and potentially fatal if you don't use safe sex.
Exactly.
And many people, again, don't tell their partner.
Right.
Especially the more sexually active.
Well, and that goes, I think, into the stigma. You know, your fear of being rejected, I think.
Well, I get rejected more when I say that I'm positive than if I don't say anything. Or in the past, when I've not said anything, I never followed through, so I didn't have to say anything. But it was like, you know, if I'm up front with it, people are less likely to
have a second date. Well, it's easy to just reject you at that point. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go unsaid, I think, and, you know, that's could be a very precarious situation.
People need to know that the devil they're in bed with is much better than the devil they don't know.
Mm. Ooh, that's good. I like that.
So that's how I perceived my first HIV positive boyfriend in 2004. So I think that's a hard thing to get your head around, but if you know that something is positive, you can actually deal with it better.
Yeah. Well, and two, we're talking about the gay community, our community, but most of the new cases are in the straight community, or quote unquote straight.
Right, I think
women.
African American women,
are the highest rate of new cases,
yeah.
And it's because of partners that don't tell their partners.
Well, it's the leading cause of death in African American women ages 24 to 35, which is ridiculous. It's amazing.
I didn't know that statistic. That's incredible.
Can I use the word penis on this radio?
Yes.
Here, what does it say?
We have a list of words, and you can say that one.
Well,
male member.
Well, we want to find out who holds the power of the penis in the African American community, and who to go after. Do we go and educate the African American women or the men? And because it's still transmitted primarily from man to man,
mm-hmm.
And so where is that we can protect the African American women, and who holds that power?
I see. Well, and how are you reaching out to the... Well, if you reach out to the women or men, how are you going to reach out to them?
Well, that's why we want to do focus groups.
I see.
That's why we want to raise money to do focus groups and figure out the right social marketing campaign.
Well, when it's socially acceptable to be on the down low, as the term used in the black community, as long as that's acceptable and without saying, then it's a difficult situation to inform.
And that's where you have to empower those people. And who do we empower is the question. I mean, you can't just send a blanket radio announcement to everybody. You have to figure out what demographic holds that power and then empower them to actually stand up and say, hey, look, before you have sex with me, I need to know X, Y, Z. Or I want to protect myself by doing A, B, C. So I see it as a kind of a double plan that we have to do.
Well, it's an incredible sense, even in the straight community, because my friends in the straight community who might have Hep C or something like that, they don't want to use condoms. And, you know, they just seem to have that oblivious to what they about their partner. They don't care. And it's there's an insanity that's insidious out there that it's okay. That you are not going to get it. And the fact is, you have to think about this as for HIV and a partner. Without having protected sex, then you're just playing Russian roulette with your life.
Well, you have to treat everybody like they have HIV. We
exactly.
all live in a world of HIV.
Exactly.
You treat everybody like they have HIV.
Just assume.
And that way you can protect yourself.
Right. Well, when you have sex, you're having sex with that person and the last those people they've had in the last 5 years.
and with my friend...
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You're having sex with every person they had for the last 5 years.
And with my friends, that's a lot of people.
I'm not sure if you can count those. Or
well, but if it's not HIV, it's Hep C, it's, you know, a whole myriad of other diseases that are in there that can be carried over a five-year period. And some of them have long gestation periods, and they don't even know about it for
exactly.
a long time. And
exactly.
that's the scary part that everyone needs to... You know, I guess we're turned into a show on protected sex, but sanity sex is what I call it.
And
have sanity sex.
And for the people that are negative out there, you may not be negative. I mean, get tested regularly. Legacy provides a free service on different days on Westheimer. Just find a place and know your status. I mean, if you're negative, that's great. If you're not, you know.
And I'll give a plug to St. Hope.
Mm-hmm.
They have great services and facilities available as well. You can email me. I get a couple of times people that talk to me and want to test through an anonymous source and walk through that program, and we're not set up to really do that, but I'll help people that I know through the resources we have.
What is your email address? How can I get in contact with you?
BAM@anti-stigma.org.
Very good. And then your website again?
www.liveconsortium.org.
Very good. Anything else, Bo, that you want to kind of let our listeners know?
We're having a fundraiser called Tea for 200 at the home of Michael Flynn and Richard Myers on Sunday, August 23rd. And Brian Teichman is our honorary chair, and we're hoping to get $50 per person and raise about $10,000.
Yeah, now they can get that information on your website?
Not yet, but I'll put it up there.
Okay. All right, fine.
I have a trial that starts tomorrow, so
okay,
I'm
well,
for it.
Lawyer. Day after tomorrow, well, you can get it up there.
This is my hobby. This
okay,
is my passion.
You got it.
Well, Bo, thank you for coming on Queer Voices, and we appreciate the service that you do for the community and all the work that you've done so far.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
Out teens will soon be playing the strings of your heart. But first, let's take a rainbow minute to tip our hats to a gender-bending jazz legend.
What Tipton did for jazz, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Dorothy Lucille Tipton was born in 1914 in Oklahoma City. She took up the piano and saxophone, but as a female, she couldn't join the school band. To perform in an almost exclusively male profession, she began dressing as a man and quickly found work playing in honky-tonks. Now, as Billy Tipton, he became a talented pianist, saxophone player, and he sang in a tenor voice. In nightclubs, women swooned over his boyish appearance. He later made jazz records with his newly formed Billy Tipton Trio. Married five times, Tipton managed to maintain his charade with all of his wives. Falling ill in the 80s, he avoided doctors to keep his gender a secret, and a bleeding ulcer cost him his life. After paramedics tried everything they could to revive him, his long-kept secret was a secret no more. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Giz Bo.
In celebration of Pride Month, the Pacifica Radio Archives launched an LGBT time capsule project. They put out a call for people in the Los Angeles area to come in and record their personal stories and any messages they'd like to leave behind for rebroadcast 50 years in the future. Among the people who responded were two amazing youngsters who took the opportunity to go into a studio by themselves and interview each other.
I'm Benjamin, and this is my sister, Jessica Pensner. She's 16 years old.
Hi, I'm Jessica. This is my brother, Ben, and he is 13 years old. Okay, Ben, so when did you come out?
I was 10, fifth grade. It was during a school day, and my teacher, Jude, he was gay, too. He is gay, too. And I thought that I liked a couple guys in my class. I was really, really confused because of all the things that was going on. I was 10. I don't think I knew very much about that kind of stuff. So then, the first time I told anybody was my mom. I went back to my mom's house after school, and then I sort of put my face to the back of my mom on my mom's back. Then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And she was like, "What did you say?" And then I said, "Mom, I think I'm gay." And then she was like, "Oh, okay." And that's all she said.
And you told me after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How was that experience for you? Because I couldn't see inside your head at the time.
It was really different for me. I mean, I've never experienced something like that before. So we were in Mom's room, and I told you, and that. And I said, "Jessica, I think I'm gay." And then you said, "I think I'm bi." And then when we hugged, we were crying. And then I felt really, really open. I felt, like, really close to you.
And that was, like, the first time that we felt so close, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because you were only 10. And that was a bad time for me, too. We were both just going through some really weird times. I'm really glad you told me then.
Me too. So, how did you feel about it?
Oh my gosh. Well, when you told me, I wasn't just crying. I was sobbing. I didn't know how to feel, like, to tell you the truth. You know, I was, still am, bisexual. But you, my brother, being gay was such a trip for me. I wasn't sad that you were gay. I wasn't disappointed or anything. It was just so overwhelming. And then afterwards, I had some time to think about it and to figure out my feelings, and I was so happy. I was one of those girls who would always want the gay best friend who we could, you know, hang out with and go talk about girly things, and oh my gosh, that person is my brother. It's amazing to have you, Ben. It really is. And the fact that you're there for me and are always so nice, you're just such a nice person. And I can't believe that I have you. What did you talk to Jude about anyway?
Oh, fifth grade teacher. After I told our parents, our dad thought of go talking to Jude because he knew that he was gay because we found out about a paper that they handed out at school.
That said that Jude was gay?
No, that said that Jude was living with his husband.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which basically says that Jude is gay.
Yeah. So then Dad said, maybe we should go talk to him and see what his perception of this was. So after school, Dad and Mom went to the school after all the classes were done. We sat down at one of the tables, and then I told Jude, and then he was like, okay. And then we talked about how he was gay and how he came out, that he couldn't come out until college. And he thought of me as really brave of coming out at 10 years old. And then we talked about his high school years, how he forced himself to keep his girlfriend because his friends were not gay supporters, and how he thought of it. Then he said that it felt like torture. So he came out in college and he regretted it, that he didn't come out sooner, and that he was really happy for me.
Are you happy that you came out so soon?
Yeah. I don't have to lie as much as I thought I did.
Did you know at 10, or did you know earlier than that?
I had a pretty okay perception of it. At 10, I was still iffy about it. There was this one person that I did tell in middle school. I forgot who he was, but he said that you can't know until you're 17. So I was like, oh, okay. But later on, I got a better understanding of it, and then I said, wow, that was such a lie. But anyway, at 10, I was not sure at all. I was confused, as most people are at that age, if they think of it.
Well, now we go to Renaissance Arts Academy, right?
Yeah.
And we came there right after that whole fifth grade fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
And our school is very open with that kind of thing. And anyone who is of any sexual orientation does not feel out of place. Did you feel like you had a better understanding of who you were in that school?
Yeah. I had a lot of people to talk to. I felt so much better at Ren Arts than at VCCS, my middle school, because it was really small, so everybody knew each other.
Is it easier to talk about it with your friends at Ren Arts?
Yes. Yeah, it really is. I actually talk about it as a regular subject now, because I've talked to them about it so much. There's this girl named Taylor, and she's a really good, she's a friend of mine, and she's a lesbian, and me and her talk about it in detail. It's really nice to talk to her about that. I'm so happy that I don't have to bottle it up so much. It makes me feel incredible. It's awesome. It's if you do, it's, I've done it before. I've stopped myself from telling people that I was gay, and I have to lie, and I'm not the best liar. I suck at lying.
Yeah, you do.
Then they ask me again, and I have to lie again.
Well, you don't have to lie anymore.
I know.
You don't have to lie to anyone, even if they are against what you are. It doesn't matter. They can't do anything to you. And if you ever need help, I'm here, and Sierra is here, and all our friends are here. Just don't worry about it, okay?
Okay.
So now you're at Renart's, and you're the viola prodigy. You are the gay, blonde, blue-eyed viola prodigy. How does that feel to be so wonderful?
I like it how everybody knows me, and I don't know them. It's fun. Sometimes I feel kind of famous at that school. It's really, really nice.
That's good. You're going to play something, right?
Yeah.
You want to go do that right now?
Yes? Yeah.
All right. Go for it.
I'm going to be playing the second Bach cello suite in D minor. This is Jessica Pensner.
And this is Ben Pensner.
And we thank you for listening to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
13-year-old Benjamin Pensner and his 16-year-old sister Jessica answered a call from the Pacifica Radio Archives to participate in a time capsule project. Their story and others will be maintained and cataloged in the archives and the Library of Congress to be reopened and rebroadcast in 2059. If you'd like to say something to people 50 years from now about your life as an LGBT person, wherever you are in the world, you can submit your story, song, poem, video, or audio email to gayday@kpfk.org or call 1-800-735-0230. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Chris Wilson, Rex Walker with Phil Kelly, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Giz Bo contributed program material. Thanks also to the Pacifica Radio Archives. Benjamin Pensner performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WLUW Chicago, Illinois, Planet FM Auckland, New Zealand, KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
caffeine. He says, thank you, have a nice day, sir. And I don't know if we're even playing on the same team. And as I head through the door, the moon that catches his eye, my heart begins to soar. He smiles away, goodbye. So, so tender and warm. I am in love with a Starbucks boy. He is an angel in a green and navy uniform. He is an angel in a green and navy uniform. He is an angel in a green and navy
And that is some more new music from J.D. Doyle, our master librarian of gay and lesbian music. That was Starbucks Boy from an album titled Pride 40, of course released this year. And the artist of Starbucks Boy was David Brown. Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Showcase featuring 50 bands on 10 stages. Sample the sounds of over 50 local Houston bands on Sunday, July 26th. Doors open at 4 p.m., bands begin at 5 p.m. Wristbands, t-shirts, and tanks are on sale now at Cactus Music, on HoustonPress.com, and at all participating venues the day of the event. Participating venues include House of Blues, Hard Rock Cafe, Rock Bar, Mosaic, Flying Saucer, Isis Houston, Martell's, Red Cat Jazz Cafe, and Dean's Credit Clothing. Attendees must be over 21. New this year, complimentary shuttle services provided by Super Shuttle. Proceeds benefit the Music Therapy Center of Houston. Coming July 26th. Don't miss this year's Houston Press Music Awards Showcase. KPFT, Houston.
This is General Manager Dwayne Bradley to let you know that effective Wednesday, July 22nd, KPFT Houston rolls out its new weekday program schedule. This is the biggest schedule change in nearly a decade, and in short, your favorite news and talk programs are moving to morning and afternoon drive times, while music gets you through the workday. Big changes include BBC NewsHour shifting to 7 a.m., Democracy Now! At 8, Open Journal moves to 9 a.m., and a new morning music block hosted by Rourke Smith will be on from 10 to noon Monday through Friday. From noon to 1, we bring you the return of the World Cafe. Much-loved shows like New Capital, Connect the Dots, Earth 101, and Partisan Gridlock will anchor our afternoon drive times at 3 p.m. Democracy Now!'s rebroadcast moves to 5, while This American Life, Uprising, Explorations, and Alternative Radio.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.